Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself the Wire.
A The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
So excited for you guys to join for another wonderful episode of the world's only The Wire podcast. The Wire, a show about how sometimes it's okay to steal homeless people if it gives cops more money. That's what it's about, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the main theme that David Simon was trying to get across.
Yes, he was. And you know what? If there's one thing we can say about David Simon is that he will never come on this podcast to dispute that.
Prove us wrong. We're out here in the streets. We're calling you a bitch.
Yeah, we're calling you a straight bitch. He's got to defend his name. He doesn't care. 5 stars in a review. You know, go on the Apple Podcast app and give us 5 stars in a review. Go on Spotify, leave a comment under the episodes, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Although I will say at this point, the subscriber base of the YouTube channel is almost exclusively for Bad Hasbara, which is a lot of fun, Vince, because every episode, someone goes like, hey, why is this channel called Fraudcast? Do you guys know what frauding is?
And I have to explain
to them, listen.
That was a long con joke I played on you. I was like, someday he's going to do something important.
And then he'll have to explain his association with dicks rubbing together for the rest of his fucking life.
I'm sorry. Would you rather be arguing about Israel?
No, I really wouldn't. I'd rather not have the argument anymore. I'd rather everyone just accept reality. But until then, frauding is when dicks are rubbing together, and it's also a metaphor for podcasting. How many times must I say this?
I like explaining that because I'm like, yeah, it was funny when we came up with it. It's funny now.
It's funnier now.
Yeah.
It's even more funny because you have to explain to people who are just like, I just want to hear about genocide news. And I'm like, well, you're also going to hear about dicks rubbing together. Okay.
I mean, that's not the topic every week. I just, you know, no, it's a metaphor. People don't understand metaphors.
People don't
get metaphors.
Problem. They don't like art the way we like art.
That's right.
Speaking of art, no, that was not good. Today, we're going to be talking about a very artistic episode of The Wire from season 5, episode 6, The Dickensian Aspect. And our guest, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, we have a great guest, fantastic journalist and the associate editor of the Electronic Intifada. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, our guest is Nora Barrows Friedman.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, I'm terrible.
Well, yeah,
awful. Yeah. Not well, but sorry, really happy to just, you know. It's okay.
You're happy to be here, though.
Really happy to be here. Long time listener, first time caller. So I got
an email the other day that someone says, like, I hope you were crushing it. And I immediately, like, in my head, I think I said it out loud. I was like, fuck you. Fuck off with that intro.
Was that an intro? It's or like was that a
real
sign
person?
Off?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I hope this email finds you fucking thriving or some shit like that.
Ugh. Yeah,
I was
like,
fuck off.
That's disgusting.
I hope this email finds you are fucking Valhalla, bro. It's like, who's in Valhalla? Everyone's shit. But not us, because we get to watch TV and talk about it.
Yeah.
Nora.
I like TV.
Yeah. Nora, you are someone.
TV. I love TV.
You are someone who loves TV. Mm-hmm. But do you love The Wire, though?
I do love The Wire. Sick. I do love The Wire. And just as much as I love The Sopranos, which I don't know. I'm just going to fangirl for a second because
please,
especially in the first phase of the pandemic. And I was just I needed content. I needed content to get me through. And Pod Yourself a Gun was it was a mainstay in my household, actually. And it's great because I, and my spouse, we could just throw an episode on. We ended up watching this. Well, first we were listening to Pod Yourself a Gun, and then we were like, hey, why don't we watch Sopranos again for the fourth time? Yeah. And so then we were then we went back to Pod Yourself a Gun and started matching up the episode.
Oh, I love it.
So it was great. And thank you for that. And I'm so excited that you're doing The Wire. And
yeah.
Especially this season.
Because this is a season. Really good. Oh, go ahead, Vince.
Sorry, I find The Wire easier to rewatch than The Sopranos for whatever reason. Mm. And I don't know what that means as a comment on either of their relative merits. But I don't know, something about The Sopranos, I don't know, it's reliving a family event that I honestly don't know where it comes from. Yeah, something I don't know where it comes from, but this is my third or fourth time rewatching The Wire, and I rewatched The Sopranos for the second time while we were doing the show, and it was great.
Interesting. Yeah.
But going back now, it's like, ooh, would I want to watch it again? And part of me is no, I don't want to. I'm not ready to relive it just yet. Yeah. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
it's
you.
Different one, feelings, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely different. I think one of the big reasons for me why I find I actually agree in a sense. I don't think that The Sopranos is a bad rewatch. I actually love rewatched it a bunch of times. Yeah,
great experience.
The Wire is better at it, in my opinion, because every time I watch it, I'm like, okay, now I get it. It's so dense that there's shit you just do not catch, because at some point the human brain has to tune out, and every time you do, you've missed a huge thing. This season especially, Nora, we have been asking all of our journalist friends to come on and talk about it, because it is one of the most maligned seasons.
Well, they also have the most time, because
I mean, they're all fired. Most are fired. Yeah. and so, I mean, that's the thing. So it's kind of perfect. The news hole is shrinking.
Yeah.
So might as well watch a season of The Wire where the news hole is shrinking. but for you as a journalist, what did you think about this season?
Well, as a journalist, I first watched this season of The Wire, I think, oh my God, when was it? It came out Vince, you have the Wayback Machine, right? It's 2010, this season or something?
This one was 2008. Okay. Right before Obama's about to be elected.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I was still working at a radio station, and it had I think it still has a newsroom. I don't know. But I remember just being really excited about, finally, a cool, realistic-ish depiction of how a newsroom operates. And and then rewatching it, rewatching this season, this past week, I was like, oh man, it's very nostalgic, because I don't think newsrooms, I don't think they exist that anymore, if they exist at all.
There's no one out there saying you know who you don't want to piss off is the local newspaper.
Exactly. Right.
No one has said that in at least 5 years.
So good. And different, I don't know. Yeah. Different, the Metro Desk and the general assignment reporters and stuff. And it just feels like a total bygone era.
Totally. I mean, listen, I've never worked in a proper newsroom, but, I worked at AJ Plus for a while, which was, you know, for me, I'm like, oh, it's funny because that was kind of like the beginning of the end for all news was all the people were like, let's pivot to video.
Yeah, they pivoted towards you.
Yes, they pivoted. Yeah. Yes.
You were crotch to crotch with the industry paradigm for a while.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, I helped bring down news, which I, of course, I...
well done.
You know, hey,
really?
I'm not a hero, but... in a way I am. But yeah, so like watching this, one of the like main comments that we have when, you know, we're talking about the Sun papers this season has been like, every time something like closes, like they have budget cuts, they talk about like closing, you know, we're closing our news desk in like Jerusalem.
Right.
And it's like, what the fuck's the Balmer Sun doing in Jerusalem?
Yeah.
It's like the idea that like these local papers would have news desks in other.
Yeah. Like, once upon a time, countries. People wanted to hear. Like your reporters report from other places.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
It's a crazy concept.
Yeah. And not just have like the same like wire copy from, you know, from like one agency that goes yes. to all the newspapers and they just reprint it without doing any other. Yeah.
It's, or just yeah. send Tom Friedman there and have him talk right. to a taxi yeah. driver for 10
yeah.
minutes.
Exactly.
I was talking to my waiter for 10 minutes while he was bringing me a martini.
He's yeah. emblematic of all Arab people. Yeah.
Thank you, Friedman, for doing the thing that we need, telling us what Arabs think about stuff.
It's kind of funny because the best thing about Tom Friedman is people always like tar him with like the most recent stupid thing he's known
right.
for. But like
right.
there is like 20 layers oh, and 20 yeah. years of dumb shit. Like
oh, 30 years.
I feel
oh,
like yeah. in college they were making people read his stupid book about how globalization is awesome.
Yeah.
It's like,
it
yeah, how'd that work out, stupid ass?
So it's yeah, he should just like retire and go mm-hmm. live on I don't know, some island.
Epstein's Island.
I was going to say Epstein's Island, but I don't know if that's still
I just
available.
Watched Paddington, and the mom goes to live at the home for retired bears. I wish they had that for, like, yeah. you know, Tom Friedman's.
Home for retired assholes. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so one of the big plot lines this season is about Scott Templeton faking news stories. Now, you're someone who's, you know, worked in newsrooms and is a journalist yourself. But, you know, I think I can speak for you when I say that, like, no one has in real life ever made up a news story. Famously, I think, you know, people just tell the truth. And
yeah.
I would like you to co-sign what I just said.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, especially when we're talking about outlets like the New York Times, for example, the so-called paper
that.
Of record, which
yeah,
would
no.
never, ever create, you know, quotes or evidence out of thin air when none exists. Yeah.
No, especially not they're like,
no.
you know, Pulitzer Prize winning
yeah.
type journalists. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like- never. Yeah, never. And he would never like go to Columbia mm-hmm. University a couple weeks ago on a panel with Hillary Clinton and Linda Thomas Greenfield and say, well, you know, as a journalist, it's not actually my responsibility to provide evidence to back mm-hmm. up my claims. It's okay. I just relay information that I'm given.
That's right. Mm. Yeah. Evidence
so,
yeah. to
give him another Pulitzer for that one.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's interesting, you know, this more recent news that's happening and this season with regards to Scott Templeton, because yeah. I don't know if you remember, and this is a spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't finished the season yet, although it's not really a spoiler. It's not like anyone dies. But Scott Templeton does win a Pulitzer at the end of this yeah. season. So, you know, I got to say, really ahead of the curve
oh,
here.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Prescient.
Last question, Nora, do you have a Pulitzer?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Considered lying more?
I mean, maybe I should dip my toe in that because apparently that's what gets you the Pulitzer. But no, yeah. I am I'm glad to be awardless because yeah. if the institutions that are giving these fraudulent hucksters awards mm-hmm. are going for that, then maybe it's a badge of honor that I don't have a badge of honor. So there we go. We just do the work because the work is important.
That rules. God bless you. And this
Thank
is
you.
This is not a show about God blessing people. No, this is a show about the wires.
Well, didn't McNulty actually like bless when anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself.
He's done a blessing before.
Yeah, he did the blessing in this episode. Yeah.
Yes. But we cannot start this podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you do the God.
The newsroom. You gotta keep a fake serial killer. Pod. Down in the hole. Season 5.
Oh. Sorry, I couldn't stop giggling throughout the...
All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else. Once again, we're talking about, from Season 5, Episode 6, The Dickensian Aspect. This came out February 10th, 2008. Vince, please break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
I will. Mystified by Omar's disappearance, Marlo and Chris ramp up their efforts to locate their nemesis. After a sparsely attended waterfront ceremony, Carchetti fires away at a larger press event and recasts himself as a champion for the homeless.
That's absolutely what happens.
Not everything that happened, but you know.
You can't fit it all in there.
Yeah, no. There's a much longer synopsis on IMDb, but I'm not going to take like 5 minutes to read that.
That's what the podcast is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we do.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
That's why you listen to this, because you're like, what happened on The Wire 16 years ago?
yeah. People, that's why they click on it. They go, oh, I always wanted someone to tell me what had happened. speaking of what had happened, Vince, what had happened at the time that this episode came out?
That's right. We're going to go all the way back to February 10th, 2008 to add some cultural context. And we're going to do that with the Back in the Day machine.
Yeah.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no Back in the Day.
Machine tells the tale, son.
That's right. We're going all the way back. February 10th, 2008. Some of the things that had just happened. Hillary Clinton has fired her campaign manager. Hillary Rodham Clinton replaced campaign manager Patty Solis Doyle with longtime aide Maggie Williams on Sunday, engineering a shakeup in a presidential campaign struggling to overcome rival Senator Barack Obama's financial and political strengths.
Oh, no, that's good. That I hope the new campaign manager says something like, you should be more of a bastard. Have you tried being more unlikable? How about that? Do that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think that's what you... Yep. Mm-hmm. Other things that happened, it was the Grammy Awards that night.
All right.
Amy Winehouse wins 5 Grammys. Winehouse may have been physically absent from the Grammy Awards on Sunday, but her presence was strong as the famously troubled singer won 5 trophies, including Song and Record of the Year for her autobiographical hit Rehab. Sprung from a rehabilitation clinic to perform via satellite from London, Winehouse delivered a stirring, defiant performance of the hit that has defined her recent fall from grace.
Yeah.
Dude,
that's a good-ass song, too.
Yeah, and she got out of rehab to sing the song about how she didn't want to do rehab.
But also, she should have stayed in rehab. I think we've learned that much.
Yeah. Kanye West, who had a leading 8 nominations, also won 4 awards. Best Rap Album for Graduation, Best Solo Performance for Stronger, Best Rap Song for Good Life, and Best Rap Performance by a Duo or Group for his collaboration with Common on Southside.
I think another point to be made, Kanye West shouldn't have college dropped out. He should have stayed. Yeah. Well, I guess that wouldn't have helped. I don't know if that would have helped.
I think not as much as
Amy staying in rehab. You know what I was watching? Have you guys ever done a rewatch of No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain?
I have not.
So that show is fantastic.
So
and
good.
One of my favorite things about it is that like every episode he talks about how much he wants to die. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's a little less funny Or it's a little more funny now. I can't, sure. I can't tell, but it's like, it's just, you know, he really hated his life.
Which is weird because everybody wanted it. But
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple more, just two more stories here. This one I thought was, I don't know, the headline, it's from the New York Post. Clinton in pimp slap at MSNBC.
I'm sorry. What?
Hillary Rodham Clinton lashed out at MSNBC yesterday, railing at the network for correspondent David Schuster's on-air remark that her daughter Chelsea was, quote, pimped out on the campaign trail. I am a mom first and a candidate second, she told reporters after a rally outside
Bangor. And a pimp third.
War criminal fourth.
Yeah, war criminal fourth, you know, and a loyal wife fifth.
I found the remarks incredibly offensive.
And a pedophile seventh. I'm sorry.
Pedophile enabler. In a letter to NBC News President Stephen Capus, Clinton wrote, nothing justifies the kind of debasing language that David Schuster used, and no temporary suspension or half-hearted apology is sufficient. So, you know, she's behind in the polls,
culture.
And she's doing what all Americans love, which is pretending to be offended and trying to get someone fired.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of just perfect. Like our version of like, I don't know, the peasants are getting restless. And so we should hang some people.
Right. We should burn a few witches or whatever.
Yeah. Let's hang someone. That'll make everyone feel better. It's like, okay, they're dealing with the crime problem.
Her letter and her campaign's rebuke to the network came a day after Schuster issued an on-air apology and was suspended indefinitely. He made the comment Thursday on MSNBC saying, doesn't it seem as if Chelsea is sort of being pimped out in some weird way? I mean,
wasn't she?
Yeah, we're all gonna pretend that we've never used the phrase pimped out and we don't know what it means.
Like, I think though it does have a different meaning for Hillary Clinton, you know, because I think she's like, listen, I've actually pimped people out before. Yeah.
You, sir, yeah, are no pimp.
Amateurs.
Yeah, like let me just say that, like, you know, I've had a lot of wheelings and dealings with sex workers, so to speak. Some of them of age, some of them not. But the point is, yeah, no. You know, listen, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is well within her rights to pretend to be offended about stuff. I can't
just
imagine.
Don't try
she
to get people
was.
Fired. God,
I know. Yeah.
Snitching. It's a lot of snitch. Okay. Anyway, yeah. We're going across the pond for this next one for my last headline.
Hello, governor. It's me. Cross the pond, yay.
Oh, I'm up here on the side of this pond. I wish there was a bloody ferry over here.
Oh, I wish we had a boat. Take me to the other side of the pond. Sorry. What's the story?
This is just a funny one. I don't know. It's a weird one. World champion boxer warns that Barack will be assassinated within months if he wins presidency.
Wow.
Well, should we print this? Well, he's a world champion boxer.
He's a boxer. He must know something, innit?
He knows something's up.
I'm going to read a lot of this because I liked it. World champion boxer Bernard Hopkins, who will fight the undefeated Briton Joe Calzaghe in April, believes black Democratic contender Barack Obama would be assassinated within months if he became president in November.
Was this the guy who fought Apollo Creed's son in Creed? The Creed movie?
No. Okay. Hopkins fought till he was over 50. He's like incredible. Like he
What's
was
his name?
Superman. Bernard Hopkins.
Bernard Hopkins. Okay. Yeah.
Hopkins, the world light heavyweight boxing champion, told The Independent on Sunday, I don't think America is ready for an African-American in the White House. If he gets the nomination, they won't let him become president. But if they do, it will be for a short time, maybe less than a month or two. His life would be in jeopardy. People may say it's time for change, but when it comes down to it, I don't think America is ready for that type of heat. Hopkins, 43, arguably the most politically controversial figure in U.S. sports since Muhammad Ali, I don't remember that, has been accused of being racially motivated for saying he would, quote, never lose to a white boy. He refused to retract the comment when he came face to face with Calzaghe, the undefeated world super middleweight champ. Can you look up his record? I'm pretty sure he beat him.
Okay, Bernard Hopkins v. Calzaghe.
Yeah, well, just look up Bernard Hopkins. It'll have his record on there. In a week that saw British sport angered by the racist abuse in Spain of Lewis Hamilton, Hopkins said, "I make no apology. People who know me know why I said it. I don't know what kind of world you live in here, but over there, across the Atlantic, I know racism exists and you can't convince me otherwise." However, the Philadelphia-born Hopkins, known in the ring as the Executioner, insists he is not racist and says he hopes Hillary Clinton is the next president. That was a wild pivot. I want Hillary to win. As I said, I do not think Obama would survive for too long if he won, and Hillary seems the best person for the job, even though I call myself a Republicrat.
I mean, he's a boxer, right? So he's been hit in the head quite a few times.
He's a 43-year-old boxer. He's been hit in the head a lot. For me, she has the experience. She has already been a president for 8 years. Bill had the title, but there was a lot of pillow talk at night. So when she gets into the White House, hopefully, we'll be getting 2-for-1. I don't really care what happens as long as they get Bush out of there. They talk about terrorism, but we've got a terrorist in the White House who picks the troops up by saying, "We're going to war. Rumble, young men, rumble." Yeah, I mean, he's all over the place. That's
I mean, I agree with that last sentiment, sure, but like, but then pivot to Hillary.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of complicated reasonings for things. As an 18-year-old ghetto kid, Hopkins served a jail term for, quote, beating up pimps and prostitutes, but reconstructed his life through boxing, setting up a foundation which builds playgrounds in Philadelphia for underprivileged children.
So he did lose to Sergey Crusher Kovalev.
Yeah, that was way later. Kovalev was like still fighting.
Right. And he was 49 years old. So he did lose to a white boy eventually.
Yeah. Russians don't really count, though.
Russians are. I was going to say Russians aren't white. I was going to do race science. That's perfect. Well, that's a fascinating story, man. I mean,
oh, he did lose to Calzaghe. Dang it.
Yeah, he lost to Calzaghe.
Oh, well. Well, yeah. You know what? At least he got to vote for Hillary.
Yeah, he also lost that as well.
You know, this is a show about people losing things.
That's right.
And being wrong.
Yes. And that's why it is time for us to talk about The Wire. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yes.
So first, before we talk about The Wire, this week's Balmer B story it sucks. Here's the thing with these Balmer
B
stories.
No, it doesn't. They're always good.
No, so I record them as fast as I can right before the episode starts, and then I feel terrible about it, and then I make little edits, and the edits haven't happened yet. So enjoy. Here it is.
There's McNulty just behind him, shrouding every step he takes, picking change out of his Pepsi. A homeless man whose name is Larry, waiting as he limps and sputters, takes him in to get some rest. Tells Raymond he stole a hobo, and then he goes and explains his plan. Jimmy takes his fucking picture, sends it to the baller son. Jimmy takes his fucking picture, sends it to the baller son. Why can't we not catch Marlowe? Just want to stop Chris.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that was spectacular.
That's the most I've ever enjoyed a Tool song. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I love Tool, and I think that was a pretty great tribute.
Yeah, well, you know, I appreciate it. And if you like Tool and The Wire at the same time, you can listen to the whole song at the end of the episode. I've had strep throat. You know, I had strep throat like a few weeks ago. But that's that's no longer the reason that my voice is cracking. it's now because I sang that song and now my voice hurts.
Worth it. Worth
it. Was
it.
Worth that. It was worth it. I think we can all agree it was worth
Look,
it.
Look, we need you to suffer for your art.
Exactly, dude.
It helps because my art is reacting to you suffering. So
yeah, that's the thing I enjoy about it is getting the reaction of you watching me suffer and just it tickling you pink.
I'm like the John Krasinski of this podcast. Like
absolutely.
Matt does a funny thing and I make a face about
and
it.
And you mug. Yeah, you mug. Yeah. And then you work with the CIA to make a Jack Ryan show or something. I don't know. Okay. So let's talk about this episode. I mean, a lot happens. It is another almost bloated episode of The Wire. Things are clearly coming to a head. All of these storylines are running on all cylinders. And, personally, I enjoy it. I love it. I love watching, the Rube Goldberg machine that is set up by the insane characters in The Wire just start creating a chain reaction that makes everything terrible. But Vince, what did you think of this episode?
I was very hot and cold on this episode. There's things I love about it, things that I don't love. I mean, I love, again, all of the newspaper stuff, I'm a huge fan of. Gus Haynes, like, I wish there was, like, an entire show about Gus Haynes, like, being frustrated by his bosses and getting an inkling that this guy, Scotty Templeton, is full of shit and just being, like, alternately supportive of his good work and skeptical of his bad work. That's great. I also thought the medical examiner, the human error in the medical lab was brilliant writing. So good that I couldn't find anything about it, but I feel like that had to have been a real anecdote, because how would you come up with that specific of a detail? It was so good. And then I also feel like this episode just had a couple like flaws that seem like they would be easily correctable. Like to me, Marlo goes into the meeting. We already know that Marlo killed Prop Joe and Hungry Man. And he goes into the meeting and he says, I was responsible. And everybody treats it like, oh shit, he's admitting that he just killed those two people. And then he like sort of pivots to saying he was responsible because Omar did it to try to get to him, which it didn't even become clear to me that that's what he was saying until the scene with Omar and Fat Face, whatever his name was.
Another Fat Face. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just feel like they just wrote they worded Marlo's speech.
Fat Face Rick. That's
Fat Face Ricky. Like they worded the Marlo speech in a way that was kind of confusing, in a way that didn't serve the story. And and then of course the homeless guy was maybe a bit much, as I'm sure everyone will note.
Yeah. Nora, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved the character development of Gus and his role in the newsroom, and how he has such an insight into like something's not right with Templeton. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And instead he's like you said, Vince, he's like supportive but like taking a step back. And then you see him like, I think like halfway through the episode, he's like kind of mentoring the other kind of junior reporter.
Right.
And talking to him, like really giving him kind of his own personal like philosophy on journalism. You know, he's talking about like you have to connect with people. You have, you know, the stories are great. Tell the story. Yeah. But really, you know, good street journalism is connecting with people.
Right.
And so he's like, I feel like this is the episode where in the season where Gus is like, all right, I have these skepticisms about Scott, but like the higher ups, the managing editor and then I guess the other editor.
Yeah.
Like really they just see dollar signs in their eyes for how many papers they're going to sell with Scott's like obviously embellished stories. And so he's like, I'm not going to fight it. Like he's going to just choose his battles and do what he does best.
Yeah. I think the thing that I love about the storyline the most is that you know, like I never worked in a traditional newsroom like this either. But the thing that rings true about it is, like once upon a time, like the best journalists were the most cynical pricks. Like, Gus, and then the tech industry sort of infected journalism. And the thing about the tech industry is it tends to promote the most culty like believers, and like you can see the shift in the newsroom going from these old hand cynical guys being replaced by the people who were the most willfully like culty, like willing to believe official lines on things and just promote whatever was happening and say whatever the public was most wanting to hear. And even like not working in a newsroom, I saw that shift happen as well. And it was a weird thing to witness, where it was like, okay, so that is what this industry values now. It doesn't seem very hard to just believe what people are telling you. It seems really easy, but okay.
I mean, there's that old adage, right? If it bleeds, it leads. Right. And that was like really really it was very clear in this episode. Like those the old timey journalists, the guys who have been doing their beat for 40, 50 years are being replaced by like these slick, like Scott, he's not even like committed to the Sun, he's like going on job interviews for the Washington Post and stuff. Like he's like using the Sun as a stepping stone.
Right. One of the funniest, I'm sorry, am I stepping on whatever you're going to say about the episode, Matt?
No. Please keep going.
Going into this scene, or just the storyline with Scotty Templeton, one thing that was like a funny anachronism to me, it was a great detail of the show, but like when Scott Templeton goes to like do on the ground reporting with the homeless people, he's wearing a t-shirt, and just like the way that he seems so uncomfortable, wearing a t-shirt, because like at that time, you went to work in your button-up shirt and your suit jacket, and that was probably what you wore all the time. And then we see this he's clearly trying to blend in with the homeless people by wearing this t-shirt,
but the only shirt he owns is merch from his previous job.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great. He's got swag shirt. And that is like, yeah,
this is him trying to blend in.
So good.
Immediately just scared off by a dog.
Completely.
He's like, oh, I see some fellow homeless have gathered by the fire barrel. Ladies and gentlemen, I also have a fish head and skeleton to eat. Like, I think he thinks he's...
yeah. With the circle part on the top coming off.
He's looking for, like, a homeless cartoon cat to talk to. And instead,
he should have made, like, a dirt 5 o'clock shadow on his face. I mean, but it's funny to me because it's like, now journalists basically only wear t-shirts, but the common thread is wearing like a free t-shirt you got as some kind of swag, because
it's the only shirt he owns, right? Yeah. Or the only t-shirt he owns.
That's still true, but
he wears the shirts underneath his like button-ups, though.
That's right.
Vince, you were complaining about that a couple
no Matt was
ago.
Complaining I didn't mind it.
That's me that I'm against. Me, I'm against it. But yeah, sticking with the Sun Paper storyline, I agree with you guys completely about like the flaws of this episode. But I also agree with you guys about what makes it great. And the Sun Paper stuff for me, I really enjoy, because it is, probably, I would say, one of the reasons that people hate this season, that people don't admit, is that they find a lot of the back and forth, like what's going on with the Scott Templeton story outside of the like making up this call from the serial killer of the homeless. A lot of that other stuff surrounding it is kind of boring and a little confusing. So we have a scene in which Scott gets a complaint about one of his stories from earlier this season, in which he talked about a single mother of four who died with an allergy to shellfish. And the follow-up was that apparently he was being took by the people who, you know, he was talking to, and that no money went to the kids. All of the, you know, donations that were pouring in for this family were going straight to the sister who was using the money to gamble in Atlantic City, which is like not a lie that is, it's like not an equivalent level of lie, you know what I mean? To like, you know, he's not so much making something up. What he's doing there is bad journalism and then defending the story.
And I think that's the next episode is really good. And it's probably one of the ones that I remember the most about this season. But I love that the point in the next episode that Gus makes was like, yeah, it's like you're going to get took sometimes, which is like you're going to believe a source that you shouldn't. Right. And there's kind of no way you know, you can do your best to avoid that, but it's going to happen sometimes. But like the real crime is that he just doubles down on defending it for no reason. When like everybody would understand if you got bamboozled by a source that was telling you the wrong thing. But the thing where you pretended that nothing was wrong is very weird.
Yeah. And Scott, like he is, at the point at which he starts defending it's right after he has just been complimented for writing such a good story about this homeless veteran that he met while pretending to be a homeless guy, you know. Well, what do you call that? What is that when you're
embedded.
I was gonna say infiltrated, but he's just gotten this big compliment for the story. Is the story that he wrote true? We'll find out in the next couple episodes. And yet he still decides to like it's a perfect opportunity to be like, you know, it turns out I got took. You know, you're already in the good graces, but instead he's just like, he just decides, like, you know, he didn't call anybody, you know, he didn't do any follow up. And I just love Gus's look at the end, because he has this look of like skepticism, but also just like, Jesus, is this guy like, is he taking me? You know, and I have a little bit of
any meeting in Bel Air Edison to hear about school zoning, and this woman talked my ear off about this. She said the kids never saw a dime. I'm hoping this is all bullshit.
And maybe you should go back and check with the family and see if we don't get took on this, huh?
Oh, hey, Scott.
You get a chance to drop a couple calls on that complaint?
Yeah, it's bullshit. Sister's clean. Everyone says so.
Okay.
And I love the look on his face here, on Gus's face, where he's just like, God fucking damn it.
Yeah.
He's legitimately concerned, because it's like all of the things at this point are adding up. He's done so many like sketchy things.
It's like pathological now.
Yeah.
And Gus's face acting. There's the other scene where Scott is going on Nancy Grace and they're all watching it on TV, and just Gus, the way that he knows that this is kind of bullshit, and you can feel that there's like this external pressure for him to just go along with this thing, because it's going to be profitable for the paper. But he's like, no, I can't turn this thing that makes me good at this job off. And it's weird that like the one place where I should be able to do this is where I'm getting like the most pressure to, just co-sign all this bullshit.
Yeah. And then, of course, the, it's like not just co-sign this, but also pivot the entire newsroom to talk about this thing that you are already incredibly skeptical of. And that's where we get the title of the episode, when their, fancy boy editor in chief or owner of the paper or whatever tells Gus that forget about the schools. Now we're just going to talk about the homeless, and I have that clip as well.
Our coverage should reflect the Dickensian aspect of the homeless, the human element. Scott will lead it off, spending a night on the streets and writing from that perspective.
Scott, he's the lead on your education project. I think we need to get him back on the...
I don't see the school project as yielding the same kind of impact as our attention to homelessness can. From now to the end of the year, let's focus not only on covering the murders, but on the nature of homelessness itself.
The Dickensian aspect of it, yeah.
I love the way he shits on his bosses to their face in this, like, really, like, I don't know. It's like he does it in a very sarcastic, in a way that, like, any, like, normal human being would be able to, like, clock. But they are just like, okay, yes, to get, that's right. Yeah, they kind of talk down to him. They treat him kind of like a dumbass. And, you know,
he's like, you know, years smarter than him. I mean, like he's incredible. And he's being completely exploited.
Yes, yes. And, you know, he's like, I agree with you, Vince. Like, I honestly would love a whole series about the Balmerson newsroom and Gus and just like watching it. I would love to continue to watch it go downhill. Like, I'd love if it was over like a 20-year span after this of just watching, you know, the jobs get worse and worse, and like, and just the pay get worse and the standards get worse. And I mean, you know, you watch the show.
It would probably have to end in like 2015 or something, because, you know, right. Gus is not going to be there that much longer.
No, yeah, he's going to kill himself. Hey!
It seems like as good a time as any to pop in after you talk about one of the characters killing himself. Theoretically, in this like spec script that you're writing about Gus.
Pod yourself a Gus.
But we do need to take a break for ads.
Oh, that's right. Because here's the thing. Things may have gotten bad out there for the journalism industry, but the podcast industry is thriving. And that's why we have ads. Mm-hmm. So stick around. Listen to these ads.
The pod hole is gaping.
Yeah. The news all maybe shrinking, but that pothole is a big old gaping pothole. So yes, please listen to these ads and stick around, because we will be right back. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
And we're back. Okay, so let's talk about what's going on with Marlo and Omar in this episode. We got a lot of back and forth. I mean, shit is
Omar's
going
out there
crazy.
In the streets looking for Marlo. He's like, this guy better come out here and talk to me. He's fucking bullshit.
I heard he got blowed. But the cold open starts with, you know, the where we left off with Omar's, he flew out of a window and off a balcony, and no one has seen him since. So they're just like desperately searching for where he's hiding out. Turns out he ends up just being in the janitor's closet of the very building that he jumped out of, which I think I would have checked. I mean, I'm not trying to, like, you know, Monday morning quarterback this, but like, Chris, check the... He didn't go far.
You think if you're Chris, you want to open like a little closet door and find whatever's hiding in there? No way, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good point, but I don't know if he was armed. I guess I'd still be scared.
Yeah.
So everyone is looking for him, and what I love is there's a moment where Monk pretends to be a cop, and he's asking around, you know, he's trying to like gather information from potential witnesses. And so, yeah, this is a clip of that from Detective Monk.
We're looking for a man went after a woman last night at Esperanza apartment. The one's right behind you. Heard anything unusual?
No, sorry. Oh my God, that's terrible. Is the woman all right?
Huh?
The woman, is she all right?
Yeah, she good.
It's jungle out there.
Right, sorry. I had to do that. I like that, Marlo crew also got like disguises and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my suit that I use just when I'm pretending to be a detective. But yeah, so they're looking for him everywhere, and they can't find him. And at some point, Chris has to tell Marlo, and Marlo, I just love the scene in the cold open where Marlo is just like trying to calculate how the fuck this could have happened. I just want to play a little bit of that just because I just think it's good face acting.
Don't seem possible.
Don't.
Some Spider-Man shit there. We missed our shot. That ain't gonna be at us.
He sure will be. And he's quiet at them for a while, but he comes at them differently. Rather than, I guess trying to straight up like find them and kill them. Like, Omar is badly hurt. He's limping. He's like, you know, he's cleaning his wounds with cleaning supplies he found in the janitor's closet. Shit sucks. And so he decides the best way to get to Marlo is to put his name in the street as a bitch, which, I think that's a very creative way of getting someone to, like, you know, fight you one-on-one. I would have never considered that.
It's what I do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. I'm just like out in these streets yelling, Jeffrey Gettleman, you a bitch and a liar. But like, no, I mean, I love the way he's doing it, because you think he's going to go on this like killing spree where he is just like, you know, he's sneaking up behind Hungry Man or not Hungry Man. He's dead. Fat Face Rick and, other people. And he's just like going full the Joker and like burning shit and calling out his name. I love it. And I have some of that.
A little something.
What's that?
My word in your ear. I'm calling Marlo a straight bitch. You tell that man I'm in the street waiting. Just like a little bitch, he ain't nowhere to be found.
I'll tell him. I will.
Now you make sure you tell old Marlo I burn the money.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
It ain't about that paper. It's about me hurting his people and messing with his world. Tell that boy he ain't mad enough to come down to the street with Omar.
He's the Joker.
Tell him that.
Do you guys get the,
wow,
the Joker
so
thing?
So subtle.
That was very subtle.
Like we said, this show's for people who like metaphors.
So yeah. It's for people who understand that art does not have to be on the nose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is. Omar's trying to get through him in that way. And later on in this season, we find out, like, because I remember watching this and going, like, this is kind of a weird strategy, I guess. Just going around and risking your life just to be like, hey, just let Marlo know I think he's a bitch and I'm telling everybody. And like, just the idea that like that is gonna, you know, get Marlo to do something as stupid as like showing up in public.
He said, but, I'm what?
Yeah. But then,
a bitch.
Of course, yeah. He's been talking trash. It's one thing to kill people, it's another thing to like try to ruin my reputation. Like, but then later, of course, you know, if you've seen the Wire, you know that this is actually very effective and may have been the thing that could have gotten Marlo.
Omar knows what buttons to push.
He just keeps
hitting the bitch button.
Yeah, you just keep, hit that bitch button, get the little pellet or something. I don't know. But meanwhile, Marlo is taking care of business in that he is also simultaneously ending the New Day Co-op.
Yeah.
The New Day Co-op.
With a bang.
I know. Yeah. He goes in there and people are very, dubious about this meeting that they're having because they're like, well, Prop Joe is dead and whoever's got the connect is probably the one who did it. And then, as you were talking about, Vince, Marlo admits to, being responsible, sort of, but not killing
it,
him.
Yeah, he means it, like, in a moral sense. And it's
I shouldn't have kicked the hornet's nest because the hornet stung Prop Joe Hungry Man to death. Yeah. It's, like, very clear to everyone that, like, Marlo's the one who did it. But in that scene, he basically says, like, we're not meeting anymore because this sucks. I'm bored. I don't want to go to school, whatever. And if you have any problems, see me directly. And also the price of the brick is going up. So
and he points cheese to like some.
Yeah, to the east side. He's like, if you have a problem on the west side, come see my man. I think he was like Monk or Partlow or I don't know. And then if you have any problems with the connect on the east side, go see Cheese. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's all very clear. Marlo is consolidated power in both east and west side drug trade because, he's very good at his thing. And his thing is, like killing people and being the guy who wears a crown. So good for him. So now we get to the nuts and bolts. Now we get to the good stuff. Now we get to Jimmy McNulty being a fucking psychopath.
Seriously.
And Bunk being like, I'm gonna do good police work out of spite. Vince, you want to take on that one?
Which one again? What'd you say?
You just didn't pay attention?
No, sometimes I zone out.
Are you fucking kidding me? No, let's talk about what happened with Bunk and Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jimmy's plan to create a homeless serial killer is going swimmingly in that they've assigned him Kima, and they're using him and Lester have cooked up this fake wire that they're using to track Marlo, only they discover that Marlo is not talking about drugs over the wire, and so they're not actually going to get anything, so they need more. And Carchetti has a big press conference where he has this is another moment that I really like in the show, where he has that brief moment where he like accidentally gets real and sort of gets angry about the homeless situation. And so like Daniels, McNulty, everybody thinks that the money tap is gonna open finally. Mm-hmm. But it ends up sort of backfiring because they don't assign any other detectives
No, they don't do anything different.
They don't do anything different. Lanzmann has found out that Jimmy reassigned Kima back to her old cases, so he like sits on his hands in terms of adding more people to the case, and then it eventually Bunk starts working backwards on his murders, and he's actually getting good information. He sort of figures out Michael's stepdad. He needs to get some DNA, and it's like a really good lead, but then he goes to the medical examiner, and because they've hired a temp, the temp has misplaced. That's such a did you pull that?
Yes, I okay, did. This is that. I think one it's of incredible. My favorite moments in this episode. Because not only is it like an incredible bit of writing that it feels true, but also the acting of this pathetic like guy who runs the crime lab in a dying city, who's just like, because he looks like his face like looks like his soul is being sucked out, because he knows that he's the guy who's like, he knows the rape kits are piling up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's the guy who is like responsible for this, but he has no like, you know, recourse, because it's like, it's either, you know, work for free, you know, forever, trying to get all this done, or just live with the consequences of the fact that, like,
I mean, just, he can't do anything. Like, play the clip.
He's just one guy, but yes, I have him, and he's just, I don't know who the name of this actor, but he's fantastic.
We're cutbacks. That we lost 3 or 4 trace examiners.
Hey.
Plus half our clerical. The freezer went bad. We lost 4 months of blood samples. Did you know that?
I got a lot of excuses. Come on. You can't come in here yelling at me. You think I don't yell at myself every night about the rape kits? Fuck.
4 months of evidence, and they still haven't replaced my damn icebox.
My heart pumps purple piss for you.
Well, we put into...
I'm sorry, what does that mean?
I don't know, but I like
it. It's classic
it.
Bunk. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm not sure either. I'm not sure what purple piss is, but I love it.
Wasn't that a D12 song?
Purple piss? Probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like something D12 would rap about, in between being like, you know, me and Charles Manson are best friends. D12 was like one of those groups where I was like, Eminem's got some very mid friends. But yeah, I like some of that.
Filled a lab assistant slot, but with all these cutbacks, the best they could give us was a temp.
A temp?
Yeah. And she sorted everything under the single complaint.
You don't fucking mean
it. Yeah. We have no idea which one of your scenes any of this shit came from.
Jesus.
Can I just point out how good of a delivery it was on this? Yeah, we don't know what any of this shit means.
We have no idea which one of your scenes any of this shit came from. We don't have a clue. Actually, except for this, she's been a pretty good employee.
I love.
She had one job.
That's my favorite part of the scene, is where he's defending like this poor functionary who's just, she's just a temp. She doesn't know what she's doing. She didn't know she was going to like misplace 20 murders worth of evidence.
She didn't know that she'd have to know Latin in order to fucking do this job. Yeah. She's just like trying, she's just writing labels on cum, you know, like she didn't know where the cum.
And the way he defends her, and then there's the shot of where you can see her just being like, doop, 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 doing some samples. Doop, doop, doop.
I wear a coat at work. It's so good. I love that guy so much. It's just like, it's one of the funniest scenes in the show. And he makes a, he returns in this episode when, after Bunk finds out that there's very much a connection between the dead man, you know, who's beaten to death in the alley, and Marlowe's crew, he goes to him to try to get the lab work done. And he explains, you know, yeah, I'll get it done as soon as the homeless thing, you know, as soon as I'm done with all these homeless kits. And Bunk does some of my favorite nonverbal acting in, like, this is just like, it's just so good. Here's a clip of that.
Work through all the trace from the homeless killings.
The homeless killings.
Everything is backed up behind that. Sorry.
Um.
He's so good at the under the breath muttering.
Yes.
He's so good.
Yeah. Oh, God. He's so funny. I love it.
He just wants to kill Jimmy.
Yeah. The subtext of that being that he has to like go back and ask Jimmy for a favor, even though he's like more mad at him than he's ever been.
It's so great because in this like episode, you realize he's so mad at Jimmy that he's doing like good detective work out of spite.
Yeah.
Like he's not he's acting like he's doing it because it's what we do. Like, you know, I'm a real cop. You know, I don't work on some make believe shit. You know, I catch a case and I work it. And like he's also opening up like 24, 25 files of like, you know, dead people who they have, you know, no clue. They have no evidence. Then he's like working backwards on shit. He's doing long shots. And it's like, there's no fucking way he would do any of this if he wasn't just so mad at Jimmy. And yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, like we said before in the show, spite is a big motivator for like most of the things going on. That's like Jimmy's entire thing is spite.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's the Irish in him, I guess.
He's ready to like destroy his entire career over it.
Yeah. And like.
And life.
And life.
Yeah. Every and season, also, it's like he's destroying his life. Yeah.
And like the people around him, too.
Yeah.
Like he's sacrificing everything. And, you know, and you ask, like, but for why? And it's like for spite, because he doesn't want Marlo to win. It's like, win what? And it's like the game we're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're
the
playing
crossword puzzle that I've made out of this case.
We're doing a cat and mouse thing. It's like you're gonna go to jail and ruin your life, because of a game you made up. Yeah, but it's great, like watching Jimmy in this episode, because he's like simultaneously like a cocky bastard because he thinks he's gonna get all this, like, you know, he's gonna get the faucet open because of this grand plan, and then watching that all kind of fall apart, finding out that like, oh no, they're not actually going to do anything different. No one is getting paid.
Finding
more.
Out the sheer quantity of shenanigans that he's going to have to pull.
Yes. And it's great because like, there's a lot of scenes with Jimmy where that I was like, which one do I choose? They're all so good. Now there's a scene with Jimmy where he's drunkenly yelling at a statue.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Vince?
Not great. It's one of those.
What is it a statue of? Did we ever find out?
Paul Revere or something? I don't know.
So I had to look it up.
Weird.
I looked it up. Yeah. It's Samuel Smith, who was a hero of the War of 1812, which is, you know, like obviously America's most important war that everybody remembers.
Yeah, that's our favorite. Well, I mean, it's got the best song.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know that one?
Uh-huh. The cannons. I mean, all songs have cannons in them.
I'm sorry.
So on one level, like I don't like it because I hate that trope of people in shows yelling at inanimate objects. Like this is a variation of people like when they go and yell at a tombstone. There's a lot of like people talking to tombstones.
It's a cop-out soliloquy. It's like just do the soliloquy. Like you don't like the
right
the,
or work it into a dialogue. You could have had him like complain. He's a drunk. He complains to the bartender. I don't know. Like he could have complained,
but he's a drunk. And he would yell at a statue. That's why I forgive it.
That's true. But I mean, so there's the level on which it's like kind of a dumb trope. And then there's also the level that the statues he's yelling at is like a public figure that no one remembers without Googling.
Yeah. And even when you Googled it, still don't know who
it
is.
Yeah, it doesn't really have any, like you think it would have some sort of illusion value, but no, I don't think it really does. Maybe I just haven't done enough research into Samuel Smith, but
yeah, you know what's crazy? I think 1812, that war, the British, I believe, burned the White House down.
Yeah, I mean, Dolly Madison, she saved the That's literally the only thing I know about the War of 1812. That's the only thing they teach is that Dolly Madison saved the portrait of George Washington. It's like, okay.
Wow.
Well, I just like, I don't know, man. That was cool to me.
And then they had enslaved people rebuild it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there's ever, if you want to know why I think it's cool, that's why. America bad. Yeah.
But he's our most.
So are the British. Sure.
He's our only like short king president, you know? That was the cool thing about Madison.
Madison, well, was he short? I didn't know that.
You didn't know Madison was short? There's like two things I know about
Adams
Madison.
Adams was short. I thought that Adams was famously short.
Adams was shorter than like Jefferson and
Washington. Was he shorter than Madison?
Washington.
Wow.
No, Madison was the shortest. Madison was like 5'4 or something like that.
5'4.
Good for him.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I stand a short king.
That's right. Mm-hmm. As a member of the short community.
Maybe we
don't, you know, he's not one of ours because he was a, you know, fucking asshole.
He's
and slaver,
I'm sure.
But,
yeah.
You know, but, you know.
But he's short and deserves respect.
In terms of stature, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. See, I always thought it was John Adams because he was played by Paul Giamatti, who I think is a short king as well.
I mean, like Adams might be. I don't think he was like notably short. I'm not sure. I actually really don't know.
I think he was a little guy. I'm looking it up. How tall?
5'7".
5'7"? Oh, all right, because he wasn't that
short-ish, probably like just slightly under average for that time. But you know, it was because he was in between the two notably tall ones.
Yeah. Well, who's the most tall? You ever Abraham Lincoln, 6'4".
That's tall.
I mean,
we should do a podcast about the heights of presidents.
Yeah, and we'll do 1,000 episodes about it. People will be like, how? And I'll be like, watch us. Jimmy is like now kind of in charge of a pool of money for the first time ever, like, because he's obviously controlling the, you know, this story, is able to like get some money. So now he's the one who's going to be like, you know, putting, you know, shit in his case file in order to get stuff done. And Freeman has now discovered that what they're doing with the phone, this phone tap that they have, is revealed by Sidner to be like, oh, they're doing business through picture message, which is also, by the way, this is like the third time that Sidner has like solved the mystery without knowing he solved it, and then having Freeman be like, ha, 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 you did it. Have you noticed that? Like, wasn't that also with like the headshot? Like, he was like, all I have is this like evidence of something. I think it's nothing. And then Freeman is like, oh, you ignorant bitch. This is actually the greatest piece of evidence ever uncovered. So like he does that again. Finds out that he has taken pictures. We don't know what's in them. We don't know how to get them. And he tells Jimmy this, and Jimmy just like is freaking out at him, like, you know, you said you would be done with this in 2 weeks, and now we created a serial killer and shit, bro. I don't know why he's mad at. Why are you mad at Freeman? This is your idea.
What did he expect exactly?
Yeah. So my favorite thing about this is that where it leads is the most insane storyline. probably just, in the show.
Yeah, just watching this whole sequence with like a feeling of unease where McNulty sees like a really homeless guy who's clearly like having a bad day, and you're
not
like,
just
what
a bad day, but he's clearly you know, got he's like special needs,
right?
And he's like not just like some guy who's down on his luck. This is like someone who's like severely special needs, and so like he's just looking at him, licking his lips like he's perfect.
Yeah, and you're wondering like, what is he gonna do? Is he gonna kill this guy? Is he gonna like
fuck this guy,
follow him around and hope that he dies? Like, is he gonna give him a hot shot? Like,
and it's so great because I have the scene in which like he brings him over to Freeman, and like it's just, I mean, listen, Freeman is like, we need to get this shit done, right? But he also, even Freeman is like, what the fuck, bro? Like, this is so good. Here it is. He's got the Pepsi cup, putting change in his pockets. His little Irish mind is going.
This is kidnapping.
He's fine, Lester. He's great.
He loves it.
No.
Even if he figures it out, who's going to believe him? He's nuts.
How do you know he's nuts?
First of all, just look at him.
Jesus.
First of all, just look at him. Look at this fucking guy. Who's going to believe this guy?
Look at this poor sucker. I don't believe we're gonna do this.
He disappears, the city goes batshit. You get your photo intercepts, and by the time we need to run down one of Marlowe's re-ups, you got all the manpower you need.
And Marlowe falls.
Falls hard.
I mean, it's like, he's not, like, Jimmy's not wrong, you know? Like, that is a way to get this done. But just watching him stalk a homeless man and just be like, I'm going to take a picture of him, and then I'm going to drop him off somewhere random, and I'm going to switch his ID with another guy. Like, he's, like, created this entire plan around stealing a man.
Yeah.
Literally stealing a man.
He's going to steal a man because he wants to catch Marlo. It is.
Like, without... when I was watching the episode, I was also like, you know, like, he didn't... I mean, he's so, like... There are moments when Jimmy is very thoughtful and, you know, like eventually, you know, he gets to be very remorseful about the position that he puts his colleagues in, especially Kima in this season. But like, but he didn't think at all about, you know, the family that of this guy,
right,
who then is going to be, you know, also thrust into the spotlight. It's just, it's so, it's so dirty.
Yeah, and it's like, it's great because he doesn't even think about his own own family. Like,
yeah, what about Beatty? Like,
yes, he doesn't think about that. He misses his like kids' recital or some shit, and like, you know, he's
been such an absent father that his kids are listening to Dead Meadow now. You know,
exactly. So like his kids are not fucking like. At this point,
yeah, I mean, Beatty's the one who's like putting them to bed and like feeding them and making sure they go to school.
Now they're never gonna know the Pokes because Jimmy hasn't been around.
He hasn't been around to introduce them to the Ramones. Yeah, but it is like Jimmy. I understand why people criticize this season. It's because it's like. There's a level of insanity that you are like, come on. Like, for a show known for its verisimilitude, this is kind of going a little bit fucking overboard.
Well, I mean, Jimmy knows that he's gone, that he's crossed a Rubicon of sorts here. But,
I still like it.
I can't like
it's
entirely.
It's great television.
It's great television.
I can't entirely disagree with it. Like as a plot line, like I know it makes me uncomfortable, but I think that was like partly the intended.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's like a lot of reasons why what he's doing is like wrong and immoral, and like why it may not work. Like, you know, this fucking guy could just say, "Hey, some cops took me." And then fuck up the entire thing. But like counterpoint, just fucking look at him.
Well, the counterpoint is like, do you object to the realism of it? Like based on who McNulty is and the situation that he's been thrust into where like, it seems like no matter what he does, he can't get the resources that he needs to deal with this case. And it's not like he started with kidnapping the homeless people. He thought he was just going to, you know, turn a couple dead guys into murders and it would all work out. But he's realizing like what it actually takes for anyone to care. And it's just like this gradual ratcheting up until he's like kidnapping homeless people.
I think it's clear that, you know, if he is a monster now, it is the system that has made him a monster. But it's wonderful, and I love it. And
it's asking the question, like how many, what, like how bad of things is McNulty willing to do in order to like get something good out of it? And I don't know. I can't object to the way them asking this question.
Yeah. I agree, and it's fun, and honestly. Like the point of TV is for me to have fun and see where it goes. So I like it. I like it. Everyone just hold it too high of a standard. That's a problem. But yeah, so that is essentially what happens in this episode. There is also, I would say, for this episode, there was finally, I mean, I'm sure I've missed a few in previous episodes, but there was a very nice Balmer accent that happens. And so that means we're going to do our segment, Balmerism.
Balmer accents, say this phrase out loud. Earn, earn, and earn, earn. Aaron, earn, and iron, earn. Damn, what the fuck? You really talk like that?
Yo, earn, 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 earn.
Balmerism.
I just like playing that sting. But in the cold open, when they are like looking for Omar everywhere, two guys are talking to Chris Bartlow. The first guy sounds fine. The second guy, I just love the way he talks. Let's just play.
Can dumpster vacant for three blocks round. Nothing.
We even checked down the source.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I like that so much. Yeah. Being decked down. It's like the there's just a lot of like glottal stops and slurring at the same time. I very much enjoyed it. Anything I missed? A favorite scene, a least favorite scene, bad acting, something you enjoyed and you want to talk about.
Mm. I got a couple things.
Oh, please.
One is that I'm sorry, Pablo Schreiber. I still really do not buy him in most of his scenes. Like his acting is just, I can't believe he's Liev Schreiber's brother because he's just, I don't know, he's kind of
so
bad.
Mean.
I'm sorry. But like with that scene, he was in it for like 20 seconds and I was like, oh, he didn't nail that scene.
I got it. I agree.
Fuck you, Krawcheck! Yeah! Fuck you! Greedhead motherfucker! Fuck you for tearing down the port of Baltimore and selling it to some yuppie assholes from Washington!
Who the hell's that?
Oh, that's nobody, Mr. Mayor. Nobody at all.
I'm sorry, but that whole scene is schlock.
Yeah.
Like Andy Krawcheck, oh, that's nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody at all.
You didn't see any.
Yeah, right.
I got another one, unfortunately. This one is, I think we could file this under our segment, David Simon's Guide to Fancy Curse Words for English Majors.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I'll have this clip, but go ahead.
There's a scene. It's when McNulty is trying to get more detectives on his case from Landsman. Mm-hmm. And he says, this is bullshit. And then Landsman says, I don't know. I thought the mayor gave a wonderful speech. I was moved, much like the bull to which you just referred. And I was like, I had to rewind it to even understand what the fuck he was talking about.
Bowel movement.
Yeah. Like that's a thing that you remember if you're writing the script, but right. I don't think Landsman's like going three levels back to make a bullshit pun, like in the course of normal speech. Just didn't quite land for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Nora, is there your favorite scene or a least favorite scene or something we missed that you were dying to talk about?
I really loved the, I'm obsessed with Scott Templeton's storyline in this season. And so, you played a little bit at the beginning, but when he's going to the homeless encampment under the expressway and he's like running away from the dog, but then like, apparently he like spends the night somewhere he wakes up and he's like, he's so awkward, like standing against the fence with like everybody. He's like afraid to talk to anybody. Like he can't form a complete sentence. And then like a car drives up. It's like, you know, some like food, not bombs or something. And he puts this like tray of stale donuts on the sidewalk and he's just kind of like, this is so out of his wheelhouse.
Yes, he's Steve Buscemi, you know, how do you do, fellow kids meme.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. And everyone's like, no one's even paying attention to him. Like that's how awkward he is. He's like a complete nobody.
Yes. And he also finds a victim. And what I mean by that is that he sees like one of the homeless guys take like a bunch of donuts or bagels or whatever it was. I think it was donuts. And then he like decides, he follows him and he's the guy who he ends up interviewing,
ends up,
this
right.
like homeless veteran who tells a story about like a guy whose hands blew off and, you know, and all this stuff. Right. And I don't know why there was something about him and seeing like how many donuts he took where he just felt like, I can lie on this guy because
like he's picking a victim.
Like no one will believe him. Like it's like I don't know. In my mind, maybe I'm reading into it too much, but he's like, this is the guy I'm gonna like embellish about.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And then the other scene that I just thought was like, Omar is. I hate to sound like everybody else, but obviously like he's one of the most incredible characters on any television show of all time. And when he's in the, like at the very beginning, when he's in the janitor's closet and like putting himself together and he's like actually crying and you can like really viscerally see how much pain he's in. And it's just like, that's, we don't really see that in other, you know, in other shows, like the character is just like, you know, especially someone as like tough strong guys. Like he's, you know, he's people around the neighborhood run when they see him, you know,
right.
And he's there like incredibly vulnerable. And I was just like, oh man, I miss Michael Caine.
And he has that movie star quality where he just glows. Like every time he's on screen, like he glows. I mean, they lit him really well too, but I think he just has that face that's
remarkable.
Just kind of lights
magnetic.
Up. Another thing that this was like a small scene. It's not really like anything in particular. It's just when Snoop and Chris are in like their sort of hideout and Chris is throwing his knife at the floor. I mean, part of it is I just wish that Snoop had gotten more scenes because everything she does makes me so happy, and I still think that nail gun scene is like the best the Wire ever got. And watching these scenes between her and Chris, and they're so good. Like you think that they are going to be comfortable because you know, they kill people for a living, like they're doing all this work, and yet kind of they're kind of still in a shitty situation.
And you know, this is a situation that they didn't want to be in the first place, but like, you know, Marlo wanted what he wanted, which was like to get Omar, and now, you know, the fact that they missed their shot at it, and he's like, he was nervous doing it in the first place, and now he's like extra fucking nervous about it, which I love. I just love watching that.
Both those actors.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I say that Gus Hains needs a spinoff, but goddamn, like Snoop and Chris, like who doesn't want to just watch Snoop and Chris
I
forever?
Would watch that too.
Incredible. But, yeah.
A scene that I really like is we see Randy Wagstaff again. And this is just like this scene. It's a short scene, but it reminded me of like how much I love season 4 and how like superior of a season it is to like anything that exists in The Wire and beyond. But you see like this transformation, like now he's like living in a group home, and Bunk is trying to like, you know, go back through all the cases, and he's like interviewing this kid who he was supposed to have interviewed a long time ago. The fact that he didn't interview him and instead Herc got to him first and fucked up his entire life, like, you know, I don't even know how much Bunk knows that all, but he talks to him and he's so clearly like changed. Like he's like learned his lesson. He will never ever make it even kind of look like he's cooperating with a cop. And after he talks to him, he just pushes a kid down the stairs.
No. So sad.
It's so sad, but it's so funny.
He's such a sweet kid.
I know.
He's been just completely broken.
About that boy likes getting shot. Now is your last chance to speak to that. You gave a statement last year.
Why don't you promise to get me out of here? That's what y'all do, ain't it? Lie to dumbass niggas. Yo, y'all need to get this police out of my face before I bank his ass.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's so much trauma.
It's so much, but he just, that kid fell funny. it's just very, what did I do?
Yeah. Poor guy.
Oh, anyways. So if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I'd give it a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Solid B plus.
Well, okay. Nora Barris Friedman, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
You know, I liked this episode a lot. Mm. I like that it was in the middle of the season. Mm. And so I'm going to give it a middle of the road grade, B plus.
Oh, it looks like we're going B plus all around. Surprise, surprise. But it's a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Nora Barros Friedman, thank you so much for coming on and talking about The Wire with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It really was a pleasure. Where can people find you? Where can people find your work?
Electronicintifada.net. And I'm on Twitter at NoraBF.
All right. Check out the Electronic Intifada and check out Nora on Twitter. Again, thank you so much. You were fantastic.
Thank you.
Wires. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out and a street name. A street name named Desire. Okay, sorry.
We have
1, 2, 3, sort of 4, 5. One of them, I could not get a name, so you're just going to be saying the name that their Patreon is, I guess. So the first one is Jesse Corocan.
That's Corocan? Isn't that Corcoran?
It's C-O-R-O-C-A-N.
Hmm. I thought it was Corcoran. I don't know. I was in my head, I had already nicknamed him Big House, because Corcoran, it's like, that's the prison place, you know?
Okay. Well, I think you can still do that. It stretches, but it's like, it works. You know what I mean? Okie dokie. Sucking on dicks. Did you send me a tweet?
Yeah. It's not related. I just thought it was funny.
Okay. All right. Next is Kirby K.
Yeah, we call this guy Vacuum.
Vacuum, I like
Kirby, you know, it's not a creative nickname, but it's
right
there.
No, I know what you mean, though.
Plus, I already did like a clan thing with some other person with a K name. So
that's right.
You can't go back to that well.
Yeah, you can't. You've already done. You did that with Kieran Kane. All right, next is Scott Bridger.
Hey, we call the Bridger.
Bridger, that's my cousin.
Hey, that's my cousin Bridger. No.
No.
I call this guy Garfunkel because he's
Bridger over troubled waters.
That's right. That's right.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. And next is Rami Akawi.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's got an obvious nickname.
Yeah. Choice, you used Akawi on my cell phone. You stop calling to me, mine.
What's that song called?
That's Drake. I don't know. Is it called Cell Phone? Probably.
No, it's like Hotline Bling.
Hotline Bling. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's yeah.
Yeah, we call this guy Bling.
I like it. I like it.
I was going to go Zarqawi, but then we got a whole thing.
Yeah, please don't do Zarqawi.
I'm not doing racial stuff.
You can't do racial stuff? No.
I can't get racial.
No. My cousin Bridger. Okay, last but not least is, this is the name, You Fuck Like My Dad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Calling this guy Long Balls.
Long Balls it is. All right, those are...
When I think of Matt fucking like my dad, I think of his long balls.
I got very long balls. I'll tie them around your neck and choke you to death. I don't know. But those are your shout-outs for this week. And if you want to get your own shout-out / street name, go to patreon.com/broadcast. $8 tier or above gets you that shout-out. If you haven't heard your name yet, we got 4 episodes left. So please, if you have not heard your name and it's been a while, email us. Let us know. Questions, comments, concerns. Fraudcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the googly voice number?
Googly voice number 415-275-0030. Thank you all the voicemails. We're going to read those at some point.
We are for sure going to do it because, we have a backlog of them, but it'll happen and it'll be great and everyone's going to love it. Okay. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah. Are you ready for another song about something that the wire did? Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. A sucky, sucky, fuck. Stuff.
Yeah, I regret not doing more Tool in the run through of this show. I should have done more Tool songs, but I'm finally doing one. Oh God, here it is.
There's Nick Nolte just behind him, shrouding every step he takes, picking change out of his Pepsi. A homeless man whose name is Larry, waiting as he limps and sputters, oil stains all on his vest, tells Freeman he stole a hobo, then Jimmy explains his plan.
Jimmy takes his fucking picture, sends it to the baller's son. Jimmy takes his fucking picture, sends it to the baller's son.
A worthless liar. I am super drunk and shrill. I will only complicate this. Trust in me and fall as well. I will steal a man from the street. I will switch out his ID. I will hide him in the shelter just long enough to get OT.
Homeless Larry, won't you whisper? Tell the son what Jimmy. Larry, won't you whisper? Take your Pepsi cup and run. Why can't we not catch Marlowe? I just want to stop Chris Marlowe. Why can't we do something better? I just want to start.
Just a super drunk and shrill. I will only complicate this. Trust in me and fall as well. I will steal a man from the street. I will switch out his ID. Trust me, trust me, trust me. OT, OT.
bitch. I am a bitch. You are a bitch. And we are a bitch. Cause fucking I fucked and I sucked. I fucked and I sucked. I both fucked and I suck. You fucking I sucked and I fucked. Yeah, bitch. Yeah, bitch.
Sucky, fucky, fucky.
Yeah, bitch. Yeah, bitch.
I suck you, fucky, fucky.
Yeah, bitch. Suck dick.
I suck you, fucky, fucky.
Yeah, bitch. Suck dick. Yeah, bitch. Suck dick.
All right. Okay.
We're going to talk about Marlo.
We're going to talk about Marlo.
You guys talking about Marlo?
Yeah.
I was passed out. I didn't know you guys were going to talk about Marlo.
You're getting good at the accent.
Wow.
You got to do like a Coke jaw when you're
doing
it.
Yeah, you got to do Coke jaw and talk about Marlo.
It's one of the hardest American accents to do.
It is at this point. I'm not even sure it's American. From space. Okay.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.